Hello and welcome back to another New Era Flames podcast, a proud partner of the New Era Hockey Network. I'm your boy, Cam Elder, at LZ14, two Zs on Twitter. And as always, joining me through the other side of the screen, we're learning to love him. It's the Clowfish, Adam Clausen, at Adam Clausen on Twitter. Adam, how you doing today, my guy?
I'm doing pretty good. Recording a little later than we would have liked.
Yeah, we decided to wait.
Yeah, day late, and then today, a little later in the evening, got caught on the hen day today. You know, I don't know if people need to be told this, but the speed limit signs going onto a ramp doesn't mean you have to go from 100 down to 40. That's for the ramp.
Nice. That's news to me.
So, yeah, that took us a little while to get home, but we're here and we're ready to go. I'm excited for this episode.
Yeah, you know, myself, not as excited. We're pretty much calling it here with the loss to Montreal last night. Time of death sometime last night, April 26th. That loss to Montreal pretty much kills it. Other than that, it wasn't a bad week for myself, you know. Kind of same old. Watched some Flames hockey. They carried us along for as long as they possibly could before they dropped the ball. We'll get there. Other than that, looking forward to this week. They got only the two games. Battle of Alberta, close out the series there. They have a chance to tie it up. I'm hoping these guys are still motivated to win outright, but another tough loss last night. It really hurts their chances. They're six back of Montreal now. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Other than that, there's some races this week, so I'm pumped up. They're going to Portugal, so that's going to be good. It's nicknamed the roller coaster. Pretty exciting track. Not one of my favorite tracks, but the overtaking there should be good, barring the weather. Other than that, not too much going on for myself. Anything you got coming up this week, Fish?
I don't know. This week, I don't got much on the go, personally. Hoping to get a gas hookup for my barbecue on the weekend, as long as it doesn't snow, because it's snowing around here. Last week really was just honestly Flames watch to keep the episode in good vibes and good spirits. We still got good vibes here, positive vibes only, but it's a little dimmer than what we had hoped, unfortunate with the outcomes. They did really good for what they did do. It's just they fell short, sadly, on that last game. A real close game. I don't have much going on this week, personally. It's just a work, home, sleep, eat type of week.
All right, so let's get into it there. You kind of touched on it. I kind of touched on it. You know, like you said, they went 2-2 on the week. They had the four games, three against Montreal, one against Ottawa. They started off by losing to Ottawa. We're kind of getting accustomed to that for whatever reason it is. The styles matchup, it ain't working. We still got to play them one more time. So in the quest to win outright, that's probably not a good look. And then the big three games against Montreal, they started off great, 2-0. They win the first two. The lines were working. Now going into the third game, we had a bit of a line juggle. Johnny and Monty get put back together with Magny flanking them. Lindholm, Dubé, and Tkachuk are reunited. Third line was Lucic, Backlund, and Nordstrom. And then Ryan, Buddy Robertson, and Richie. Now, I thought for the first two games the Flames were playing really good. Obviously, they won them both 4-2, 5-2. They controlled a lot of the play. You had the Johnny and Monty split up, and it was working. I think Johnny's got 9 points in the last seven, something like that. And same with Lindholm. He's pretty up there right now. Monahan cashed in a couple. So I don't really get why we shuffled up the lines before game three and threw him in a blunder. I understand that Hanifin went down in the second game there, so you had to change up your defensive pairings. But why that had to affect all four lines on the forward lines is beyond me. But I felt that kind of hurt watching the game last night. It was kind of an ugly game. Like, the power plays were nice. And I got to say, like, for the empty net segment there for both teams, it was some of the worst empty net hockey I've seen in a long time. But yeah, for me, the thing that really caught my eye was the line juggling there before the third game. And I don't get what Sutter was thinking. I'm not a coach. I coach you seven kids, and there ain't much line dressing there. So I don't. What did you see, Fish? There, like, what? Why are you thinking they change up the lines here before game three when everything seemed to be working so well?
Yeah, everything seemed to be working well, and the most crucial game of the series, seeing as how everything else turned out. And you decide to stick Johnny and Monty back together. But that being said, I honestly thought that that line still had some jump with Johnny. I thought Johnny had an extra little kick in his stride for most of the game. He was bouncing around in Magny. But same thing with Monahan, boring Sean Monahan. He just kind of seemed the same. He didn't seem like he was living up to his line mate's energy. So I honestly didn't mind that line, but of course I'd love to have it split up. That's what we've been preaching here for a while, and it works. So why not keep it like that? I don't get the shuffling even with Dubé being down low on those lines. It was still working. He kind of seemed to be getting in like every second shift. He'd be on a different line almost, like he'd be up a line in the rotation. And honestly, I really did like Buddy Robinson in there. Like, imagine a line with Robinson, even if it's Robinson, Ryan, and Richie. That's still a pretty big line just with your wingers. But if you can convince Luch to play center on that line, that's a line I don't think many people want to come up against.
And the thing about Buddy is, actually, he hasn't played a lot of games with the Flames, but when you look at his ice time in the games that he has played with Flames, he spent most of his time in offensive zones. I know he's just a fourth liner at the moment, but that says something for this guy's playing. He's a big boy.
Yeah, 6'6" or something like that. I personally feel like, I don't know if it was because Buddy was in the lineup that Johnny just decided to go all-star out there, but I noticed that he seemed like a different player when Buddy was in the lineup, in my opinion.
They're boys. They go back, way back together, but I mean, Johnny's been, especially this last, say, 4 or 5 weeks, Johnny's been all around it. He hasn't been the issue by any means, and I mean, I'll stick by everything I say, and I ain't prepared to get rid of this guy and let him walk. I do it. If he wants to be in Calgary, and he truly does want to be in Calgary next year, like, that's one of my top priorities, is getting this guy re-signed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, we kind of already touched on it a little bit with just fans aren't going to be happy with their return on Johnny, and I don't think that people are ready to see what they're going to get. They might be living high off the Bennett deal, but I don't think it's going to be anything spectacular that's going to change the whole tide of this team and make them like a Stanley Cup playoff contender that no one's going to beat just off the Johnny deal.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, honestly, the Goudreau trade, if it were to happen and come to fruition, like, he's probably only nabbing you one extra pick than what Bennett got you with a second high B/A-level prospect, and then maybe another pick for the Johnny thing. I mean, you're never going to win a trade when you're the team trading the best player 95% of the time. And yeah, in our case, like, I don't think Johnny's the problem here in Calgary. I know his playoff record hasn't been the greatest, but, you know, you got to put the team around him too as well. And I stick my flag in the ground on it when I say it. I wouldn't be trading Johnny unless he wanted out and he told you that he wanted out. If he still wants to be a Flame and is willing to sign that new contract, I'm having him here for life. This guy he's explosive. He's our best offensive weapon by far. And his play these last couple weeks has been showing it. So I wouldn't get rid of Johnny again. Someone who I would kind of get rid of, and Buddy Robinson being around kind of helps us get rid of him, is Richie. I'm so overseeing this guy on the ice. Like, I can't. You got Daryl skating him on the second line every practice, giving me aneurysms before games. You watch this guy. He had the game against Ottawa. He had the fight. Everyone loves the fight. But you watch that shift before the fight. You know what? He's lucky he took a fight, because the puck went by him three times on his boards on the forecheck before he took that fight. A fourth time it went by him as he was looking down the guy he was about to fight. So he's lucky he got a fight out of that shift, because the puck was flying by him on his boards on the forecheck three times before he took that fight. I am so over Brett Witchie anywhere in this lineup. Anywhere. I don't even care that he scored last week. He should have had like three or four if you look at this guy's chances. I'm so over this guy being in the lineup. Ronaldo, better player, maybe not as tough fighting wise, but like, how tough do you need to be, especially if you're skating a Buddy Robertson and a Milan Lucic out there? I'm so over Brett Ritchie. I didn't even plan to rant about this guy, but now I'm sitting in my chair here and I'm fired up about this guy because I'm tired of him. And the worst thing is, my dad loves this guy. Now, I don't know if he's just trying to F with me, but like, he's when Ritchie scored, he's like, "How do you like that Ritchie goal?" I was like, I'm surprised he got it.
I was pretty close to sending the same thing. It's funny when Ritchie scores now. I think we need to buy you a Ritchie jersey.
Nah, I don't want it. And he won't be. He won't even be here next year. I'm so overseeing this guy in the lineup. Like, let's finish out the year. We're pretty much dead in the water, and let's get this guy out of here. Like, he's not an NHLer. There's a reason he came in on a PTO. The other 30 teams around the league knew what they were seeing when this guy was on the ice. Yeah. I don't know why he's here. I don't get it.
Well, you don't want Monty to go, but does that leave the door?
No. I'm okay with Monahan going.
Oh, sorry, Johnny. You don't want Johnny to go, but does that leave the door open for Monahan to leave?
Well, I mean, one of them's got to go, I feel. Honestly, like, if you're going to change this team up, like, it starts with the core. These guys have been together a long time. I don't think Johnny's the issue. So yeah, it's got to be the other guy. And hey, I'm a Monty guy. I'm Monahan all the way. I got the Monty jerseys. He's been the guy I've invested in. But I mean, sometimes it runs its course. And if we could only trade one or get rid of one, Monahan for sure, absolutely. And I know he doesn't bring back the return or anything, but for what you get on the ice, it's Goudreau all the way.
Do you want to touch on the? That being another jersey of a player that would be out of the organization, your little jersey struggle that you have there with some of your jerseys you've collected over the years. And when you said invested in a player, I kind of thought back to a certain Pittsburgh Penguin.
Oh, I got a couple of those. So yeah, my thing with the jerseys, we're not going to get into origins of jerseys, but I'm not like the biggest front runner guy. Maybe I've jumped the ship a couple times on a couple jerseys. I mean, I got a rare number 47 Berchi jersey. I don't know how many of those are floating around. Brian Burke owes me a new jersey for that one, because he made Berchi change his number down to like 20 something, because no skaters could have a higher number than 33. And BS, whatever. Burke, you still owe me a jersey. And I also got a Janko jersey, but that one I'm super invested in. We ain't gonna get into the story behind that one this episode. But I've never been invested in a prospect more than Mark Jankowski for the Flames. So I naturally had to get a jersey. But and let me just throw out a little disclaimer there. I do have a guy inside the dome that gets me a pretty sweet deal on jersey. So I'm not wasting as much money as everyone thinks. But yeah, there would be a couple Monahans that get retired. I retired a Brody earlier this year. But I mean, I love all these guys, and even when they leave, it's not like I'm still gonna cheer for them. But yeah, I'd be trading Monahan before Goudreau, and hey, I could hang another jersey on the wall of fallen soldiers. It is what it is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I remember the day that Janko signed with Pittsburgh. We vowed to follow him on his journey.
He started hot too. And hey, he switched to number 14, which is my number. So I'm okay with that.
And I'm pretty sure Janko scored the first goal in the whole year, in the whole entire NHL this year.
He did. That's what I mean. He started off on the right foot. Yeah. All right, so we had last week. It didn't work out the greatest for us. I mean, play good hockey, but in the end, you don't get the results you need. It leaves us 6 points back of Montreal. Barring a dang miracle, we're probably out of it. They have 51 points. If we win outright all our games, 8 games, which includes one against Ottawa, it's probably not happening. If we win them outright, that puts us at 61 points. Montreal has 9 games left. They couldn't win more than 5. If they get 10 points, they hit that 61 threshold. That's where the playoff race is. I ain't counting on it. If they go undefeated and run the table, I'll be surprised, but last night killed it. So with that being said, we look forward to this week. We got the two games this week, Thursday, Saturday, both Battle of Alberta's to close out the series. Now we're sitting at 5-3 Edmonton right now. Hopefully the boys can tie it up, make it a nice even 5-5. Now the way McDavid's been playing lately, I don't know, that's going to be tough. But the rest of their team, you just got to outscore McDavid when you play those. But the thing about Edmonton, like they always, as a team, as a whole, they always come to play when it's the Battle of Alberta. So we can't really scoff at their depth like other teams can because they wake up to play us no matter what. So we need these two wins for more reasons than just tying a season series and me not buying everyone lunch at work. So I don't know, Fish, how do you see Thursday, Saturday coming down? They're both in Edmonton here. What are you seeing? You follow the Oilers pretty good. They've been playing pretty well as of late. They just fleeced Winnipeg like 6-1 last night. McLeod made his debut. That other defenseman there made, I always want to call him Kulikov. He made his debut playing with Larson. They looked all right by all means. I didn't watch any of the game. What can you tell us about the Oilers coming up this week, Fish?
Well, yeah, I'm banking on two lunches this week from you and the two wins. The that game out of the two new guys was pretty promising. I thought McLeod already kind of looked like he was a good bottom six NHL center, and he should just honestly stay there. I don't think we need to rush Jujar back considering the things that have happened to the guy, and like he took a weird hit and couldn't even stand up, and you don't want to see that for anyone. So we wish him the best, and hopefully
still lingering concussion. I would imagine he's probably done for the year.
Yeah, and like don't rush him in, like, just because he's one, him and Cassian are like the Oilers' physicality, and they're both out now. Cassian,
they're the grit.
Cassian was put on to the LTIR, and I think they should do the same with Jujar. I think we can deal with what we have. Kulikov was a +2 in that game, so a lot of people are saying that he's already better than Chris Russell, and that Chris Russell won't ever play another NHL game for the Oilers. But I personally am a fan of Chris Russell, which, going back to the Battle of Alberta question, I should have mentioned Chris Russell instead of Mike Smith, because I am a big Chris Russell guy. I love how he can just take so many shots, and he's up every single time. But no, I think with McDavid on the quest for 100, I think he'll get a couple extra more shifts.
And this is what scares me. This guy's on the quest for 100, and the team he lights up the most, he's about to see back-to-back.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of promise. It's frustrating when the Oilers only show up to play the Flames because it's the Battle of Alberta. I wish they could do that every night. But that being said, that gives you an extra little boost knowing it's a Battle of Alberta. And I think they're going to be really two teams that just really want to win. Calgary, if they're out of it by then, they want to play spoiler. They're going to be like the pesky Ottawa Senators and try playing spoiler for the remainder of the year. Personally, myself, I hope the Canadians do fall. I do love a good meltdown. I am an Oilers fan, so I'm used to some pretty good meltdowns. But yeah, I think there'll be a couple of good games this week. Pretty entertaining. I don't imagine a blowout personally, but I mean, there's been a 5-0 win for Calgary, and there's been blowout wins for Edmonton in the Battle of Alberta this year. So we'll see.
A lot of blowouts this year.
Yeah, blowouts or one goal games. There's nothing like a 3-0, but like when you get past the 3-0, you're going past six. They put six past Hellebuck, so. Poor guy.
So Flames Nation wants to know, Fish, will we be seeing James Neal on the ice Thursday? And will he hopefully be skating with Connor McDavid on that top line, getting all them minutes?
I know you guys want James Neal to chew up all those first line minutes, but I think personally Dominic Cahoon is probably going to stay. I think the lines are going to stay still for a little bit. I thought Cahoon played pretty well. He showed that he can pass the puck pretty good, relatively good, and he got a direct assist to a McDavid goal. Puljujärvi is pretty much a lock on the first with McDavid. That's their pairing that will probably not be broken up for a while. Keep the Dynamite line dry, Nuge and Yamo. And then it's just floating around those bottom six guys. I don't think Neil even looked healthy in that last game, honestly. Like, his skating looked like he was in pain. He was slower than James Neal normally is.
I don't know. It looks like a healthy Neal to me.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just me not noticing it, but I feel like Neal got a deeper tint to his visor. I never realized that he had a deep tint to it. So maybe he's struggling with migraines or something. He's sign that he's getting old and that he should hang him up, but. I'm seeing all these things that I don't think he honestly should even be playing right now. I think they should just not have him on the roster, just put him on the taxi squad and let him live it out and be like, okay, buddy, this is it. There's nothing really else for you unless another team wants to pick you up on a PTO. You're gonna have to ride out your contract here, and that's my personal.
Buy him out, I guess.
That's
I won't look good. Yeah.
No. Yeah, especially Lucic being like one of the top scoring forwards on the Flames right now.
He's had a great season, no lie. And yeah. I mean, with these two games and officially the Flames not being out of it, I'd imagine we see Markstrom for both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, in that locker room in the heart of Flames Nation, I'm sure the mantra is still win at all costs. So we're gonna see Markstrom in both those games, and he's been.
Yeah.
He's been finding his form as of late after the injury struggles. He's been getting it back. It might be a little too late. That's unfortunate. But I imagine we see him Thursday, Saturday.
Yeah, you could tell that the boys were already pretty like they knew it was do or die. They needed to win when Tkachuk gave up that puck at the blue line. Like that was their season at that point. And they're still in it now at this point, but it's just elevating their game more. They don't have to play spoiler now because they're not in that spot right now, like I said earlier, but in their mind, it's not over till it's over, of course.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're a professional, and I mean, you don't get to these elite of elite levels without having that win at all cost mentality. Like, none of these guys ever just folded in and collect a paycheck for sure. I mean, that's why they're pros. That's how you make it here. So, you know, they're still going to bring the jam. I just hope it's going to be enough. Yeah, it's a lot easier for me in my life when Calgary beats Edmonton. So, yeah, I don't want to lose these last two and lose the season series 7-3 or something. It'd be a lot easier for me if we tie it up. We'll see what happens. On to the next one. We'll see. Fish, so, you know, it's been kind of an era of mediocrity around here lately. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you is kind of an outsider looking in. Brad Treveling back as a GM after this year. What do you think?
I think there's a possibility. It depends where the team, like the organization, wants to go. It's not like he's failed the organization, in my opinion. Like, they've had a lot of good seasons, and there's a good team that they've built. There's been some good deals that have happened. It's not like he's Peter Chiarelli or anyone like that, for sure. Like, no, not even close. But like I said, if there's someone out there that's really knocking on their door that's a definite better option, then there is definitely a potential that I could see him leaving, just with all of the coaching issues and all that stuff. It seems like as of late, there's been a lot of change in Calgary, and it wouldn't surprise me to see Treveling end up going. But it's not like he failed the organization, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I don't hate Brad or anything. I think he's done a fairly well job. I actually think he's quite a maestro with contracts. We have a lot of good contracts in Calgary. I think he's really good at getting a lot of bang for his buck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at first thought, when I thought about this question, I was like, you know what? He's probably not back because, you know, the mediocrity, the team's not where a lot of people feel it should be. They definitely underachieved this year. So I was thinking, you know what? this is probably the final dagger in the Trev GM regime. But then I also thought, well, if you're an owner, are you going to let your GM who's on his last leg go out and sign a coach for 3 years? So, I mean, if he gets green lighted to sign the coach for 3 years, I'm not quite sure the organization is actually done with him. So at first thought, I was thinking he's probably not back. But then when I thought about it, you know, the body of work he has done, yeah, there's a lot of years where you could say we underachieve. It is what it is there. He's a maestro with the contracts. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago that ownership greenlit him to go out and sign Sutter for 3 years. So, I mean, you don't do that just to turn around in the offseason, let go of your GM, and then go on a GM hunt and be like, hey, you can come in as our GM, but you can't really touch or bring in your coach because we got Sutter and he signed for the next 2 years after this, because this year counts as one of his three. So I think Trev's back. If he's gone, I think it's a tough GM search just because I don't know how many candidates want to come into a situation where they can't do their own coach and coaching staff, and they're not going to sign Sutter for 3 years and get rid of him the next year, no matter who the GM is. So yeah, I think he stays.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, why would you be like, hey, new GM, you can do everything you want. You can't touch the coach because of the old guy we just got rid of. He signed him, so you can't touch him.
Exactly. And the organization's not going to green light him to go out and sign a coach for 3 years either. So I'd imagine he's back in the seat next year. And we got some contracts to sign, so it's not the worst thing having the contract maestro.
Yeah.
Offering up the Connies.
He's, apart from Chucky, I know you mentioned this to me before, and he said, like, listen, no one's going to get more than our captain. He's our captain, right? So I really wish that that's something that we could say, but McDavid's making like 12 mil, so that's not really a place, that's not a good starting point for anyone.
Yeah, and that all started when Goudreau signed his big extension. That was the thing. You know, I mean, Giordano was 6 years younger, so a little bit more spry, but that's what Brad came out and said. He's like, hey, we're not going to pay anyone more than what our captain makes. 6.75. Look at Johnny's contract. It's a match.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm just looking at this right now. But so Gio and Johnny each make up 8.3% of the salary cap.
Yeah.
Tkachuk makes up 8.6. So you look at your top three forward deals that you have, it's Tkachuk, Gaudreau, Monty, that's 8, 8, and I guess 8 if you're just rounding them. McDavid, 15.3%, 10.4%, and then Nuge is at 7.4, and that 10.4 is Leon. So you set yourself up really, really good to sign some more solid depth players here in Calgary, especially seeing as Tkachuk's going to be your next captain, and he's only making a smidge more on the cap percentage than these other guys. And your superstar, Johnny, and your ex-captain, Gio.
Yeah, and I'm... Yeah, exactly. It goes to speak for the contract. He works miracles. I mean, look at Lindholm's contract. Look at Hanifin's contract. Look at Rasmus's contract. All these guys are locked up now, all under 5 mil. They're all going to be huge cornerstones for the Flames going forward. They're all young guys. He does great work with the contracts. I'm not going to knock him there. I don't know how much he is to blame for all the underachieving that happens on the ice. Because when you look at this roster on paper and you see like a Michael Backlund as your 3C, you're thinking, damn, like this is a pretty good, well-rounded roster. And I'll be excited to see where it goes when these young D-man grow up and mature into their roles here in the coming years, and you get some passing of the torches from Gio onto the next horse there. But yeah, I think he's back, and you know what, we got some big contracts to sign this offseason, so he's not the worst guy to have in the chair by any means.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's not a Shirelli, and yet pretty sure he's still out there looking for a job right now.
So. Yeah, exactly. And the trades that Trev has been forced to make, he's got some nice return on. So It's not the worst thing. I do think he'll be back. At first, I thought, nah, but when I thought about the signing Sutter, 3 years, all that jazz, I'd imagine he'd be back. You know, Fish, we had a Hanifin went down. I think we talked about it last episode, what looked to be a collarbone separated shoulder. Ended up coming back that game, only missed a couple shifts. Turns out he was playing through the shoulder injury. I'm not surprised that it was bunged up because we both thought he was done for the year there.
For sure.
Saturday night, he takes a spill flat on his back. All that impact on his shoulder just cooked it. He's done for the year. It's unfortunate for our chances. It's unfortunate for him. It might open up. It's going to open up a spot for Shillington to maybe earn a contract coming into next year.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
It sucks to see because, honestly, Hanifin, he's young, so he'll bounce back, but he was definitely having the best season, his best season of his career, for sure.
Yeah.
He was logging huge minutes for us. Him and Anderson were looking pretty deadly out there, but it sucks to see him go.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And like we said, I'm not crazy that thinking that he was holding his stick wrong because he had that stinger in him still. And that's the only thing that was leading me to think, yeah, he's playing through this. He's playing through this. And lo and behold, out comes the report, season ending surgery. I hope him the best, wish him the best. He's a Hurricanes alumni, so he's one of my boys. And yeah, just after playing with Tanev, it really reboosted his confidence to the player we know he can be. And you just hope a quick and speedy recovery for him.
Yeah, you know what? All the props to him for trying to play through. He knew how important every game was, obviously. So, you know, he tried to suck it up as best he could. But, man, the way he landed on his back there and just flat on it, like the impact on his shoulder, whatever pain he was in, probably got times by 20 when he hit the ice there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Unfortunate.
And like you said, yeah, Shillington's going to have to walk into this knowing that he's playing for a contract. I know it's only 10 games. It's kind of tough. But, hey, the NBA does 10-day contracts, so.
Yeah, and you know what? There's enough history with Shillington, too. Like, he's been in the organization long enough. He's got a lot of chances to play. So, you know, we got 8 games left here, and he's probably going to see all 8 of them, barring an injury or something happening. So, I mean, it's a good opportunity for him to step in and show he's ready. I would like to see him playing with Gio. I don't want to get into deep pairings here, but
yeah,
Gio, Shillington, Tanev, Stone, Valley, Andy, maybe. That's just a whiff.
Valley and Andy in there. Well, I was going to say about Stone is I kind of mentioned him on Twitter a little bit that I kind of underestimated him, but I was thinking about the Stone of old with his 3.75 mil contract with no move clause. But now at that 700,000, he gets to stay in the lineup. I hope that doesn't go to his head. I hope he keeps playing like he needs to play good to be in the lineup. And yeah, looking at Stone, how he's played over the last couple of games, like for 700K, that's a great steal of a seventh D-man. And
for sure. Now, we still are paying him for the buyout on his contract because we bought him out of that contract and brought him back at a way lower cap. But yeah, for sure. And I mean, with that being said, exactly for the 700,000, what he's doing in your lineup. So like, I'd rather see him there with all his experience than like the Connor Mackeys or anyone else we could bring in right now that I doubt we see because that should be Shillington's ice.
Yeah.
And of course, you still have Nesterov floating around too.
Mm-hmm. Mackey just did get called up to the taxi squad, though, I believe.
Yeah, and that, yeah, the Stockton Heat have been relocated to Calgary for the whole year. So, I mean, their AHL team is right there for them to call up and whatnot.
Good opportunity. But,
you know, with the off-season looming and the playoffs all but gone for the Flames, there are, you know, in my eyes, 2 pretty important contracts to get done this year. I'm talking about Uso Valimaki and Dylan Dubé. For me, Dubé, I could see as a bridge deal. His numbers are pretty comparable to Magny, actually a little bit less than what Magny did on his first couple years. Dubé in his first 3 years with the Flames, he's played 113 games. He's got 15 goals, 23 assists, good for 38 points. Pretty Magny-like numbers. Magny had a bit more production. He was sitting at 55 points after his first 3 years with Calgary, but that was also in 125 games. Magny ended up signing a bridge. It was 2 years at $2.425 million. As far as Dubé goes, I kind of like to see the same. You bridge him for the 2 years, kind of a prove-it contract. We get to save some money, maybe be able to make some moves to bolster the lineup. And I'd like to see him land. If Magny got 2.4, I like to see Dubé anywhere, that being the top, and then anywhere from the 2 million to 2.4 for 2 years, bridge Dubé. Fish, would you do anything different with that first contract?
Really close to what I would do personally. Just kind of looking at it, and I was looking at comparables, and I hate to bring up another Hurricanes player. It's not the exact same style of play, but point production, a contract that I think would be great, Warren Fogle from the Hurricanes, kind of the same thing. He's making 2.15 mil right now for 3 years was his original contract. I think he only has 2 years left on that deal. So seeing as I think Magny's the better player right now, production wise, points wise, and he's at 2.425. I think putting Dubé at a 3 year 2.15, just slightly under Magny, would be a pretty solid deal. That would put Dubé to be he'd be 25 years old coming up at the end of that contract, coming into maybe the beginning of what his prime would be, and then you can really sign him to the deal that he's really worth. That in my opinion, that's what I would do with Dubé. Just based off of the comparables, just the one quick comparable that I found.
Yeah, so we're both kind of thinking the same thing with the Dubé contract. Extremely important to sign this guy. I think he's going to be a big part of the future here in Flamestown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you bridge him 2 to 2.25, kind of approve it, show me, give him a chance to earn it, which I think he will. I don't see him being like a top flight player at the end of these 2 years, but you're hoping, like you said, he's what, 26 if you bridge him for 2 years? You're hoping, or 25, sorry.
For three, yeah. He's 22 yeah. Right now. So
you're thinking in the next 2-3 years, he's going to hit his stride, hit his prime, and it lasts as long as it lasts for a guy like that. So, yeah, it's a big, important contract. Another contract, the Valimaki contract.
Your boy.
I'm going to take a different approach on this. He hasn't had that much NHL experience here. So, you know, a lot of people might be thinking, bridge. I just don't want to bridge everyone because, you know, in 2 years down the line, that's going to create a problem. Edmonton might run into that problem with some of their contracts and how against the cap they are, and a lot of their money ain't going anywhere. But for Valimaki, personal preference now, you know, he's had an up and down season. He's coming off a major, major knee surgery that's kept him off the ice for a good while, and then, you know, coming essentially on a new knee. So he's going to have his ups and downs. His first full season in the NHL, a bit of an odd season with COVID and all the other things going around it. So, you know, a little bit. End of the day, I think this kid's going to be an absolute star. An absolute star. He needs a contract. You know, he's not all the experience in the NHL, not the greatest track record of consistency. So this is a case where I think Trev can work his magic and sign this kid for, he's 22, so if we sign him for 4 to 5 years in and around that $4 million range, I would be a happy man to lock Valley up. Because, you know, year two of that contract, he's earning it tenfold. I believe he's going to be a star. I could be wrong. I could be wrong on everything I say in this show. I could be right, though, but I could be wrong as well. But Fish, what do you think about the Valley contract? I got him 5 years, around four and a half. I feel it would be a little high to pay just with the results you've gotten out of him. So I'd like to keep it around four, but hey, they went 4.5. I'm okay with that too. What do you see?
Well, I'm going to go the exact route you don't want them to go. I'm going to say another bridge. I'm looking at it like a Bear-like extension, like Ethan Bear on the Oilers, kind of another prove-it contract. I know he hasn't gotten the opportunity to prove what he's worth, Valimaki, and I would be happy as a Flames fan, if I was a Flames fan, to get Valimaki on a 3-year deal at $2 million. That's pretty much an Ethan Bear contract.
Yeah, that'd be a great contract to carry him till he's 25. But if you start bridging everybody, you run into what's going to be a Magny problem. All right, so Magny's outperforming his $2.5 million. Next year, he's on pace to really outperform it, especially if he's getting consistent minutes with Goudreau, the little man and the little guy, a new connection brewing in Calgary. But, so a guy like Magny, you bridge him. You know, it's a nice, cute $2.5 million for 2 years. So when this contract's up, what's the raise like for Magny, especially if he improves on this year? What's the raise like there? Same thing with Valley. He's 22. This kid's going to hit his prime here in the next couple of years. You sign him to $2-3 mil. Yeah, that's cute. And then when you got to come up to sign him in his prime, he's looking for $8-7 mil. He's priced himself out of your books. Same thing with Dubé. If you just start bridging everybody and, you know, these kids are going to bet on themselves and start, you know, you'd hope as a fan of the Flames that they outperform these contracts. But at the end of these contracts, if they all need raises, like, we don't have 24 mil to throw around. So you can't be bridging everybody. So that's why I'm disagreeing with you there. And I just think out of the two guys, Valimaki has the bigger breakout and like value potential in the end of these 2 years. So if you bridged Valley, I think he's in his prime at the end of these 2 years. He's really found his stride. And then he's, you know, you're looking at a big contract to sign him. So why not get him now? Save a couple million off the top. You got to spend a little up front. So it looks, you know, 5 years, $4 mil. It looks like $20 million contract to a guy that's played essentially one season, one shortened season in Calgary. But in the long run, if that kid does flourish and boom, and, you know, your scouts and everyone, the organization has put a lot of apples into the Valimaki basket. So, you know, as an organization, you're also betting that this kid's going to be a star. So you kind of want to try and lock them up for cheap while you can and not just go around bridging everybody. And I mean, that hasn't been in Trev's MO by any stretch of the means. So I think he bridges Dubé and then you tag Valley for that 4 or 5 year, which would just be money.
It would be solid to do what you want to do with Valley, because if you look at the D right now with Tanev, Anderson, Hanifin, that's kind of like the three guys that'll be there for sure for quite a while. They're all in that 4.5 mil. So then you throw him there, you got your top four for the future if you lock him up for a long time. Gio's contract expires. There's no way he's making a 6-7-5 again. He'll have to take a huge drop if he's going to stay with the Flames or honestly go anywhere else.
Yeah, if he's even here. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you got Shillington, which I don't know if you go bridge on Shillington instead, because he hasn't gotten as much of an opportunity as Valley.
Yeah, and he's an RFA at the end of this year, Shillington. Yeah. So while we're on the topic, we might as well bring it up. Where are you going to sign this guy to? Because I'd imagine you bring him back for sure. He's great depth. Yeah. He's a, what, $1.5 million guy right now you give him?
Shilly
1 year, 2 year. I know he's making the 700th hour or whatnot, but I mean, this, he needs a contract too. It's not like a big one or anything, but you give him $1.5 million to be your seventh depth guy. I think that's no issue.
I was gonna
Stone
say,
would need a contract too. So I would bring back Stone. So, I mean, I don't think he gets a fat raise either. He seems to be happy playing for the $1 million. So that's, you know, if you're top four or making in that 4-4.5 excluding Geo range, and then your bottom two are essentially $1 million defenseman, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'd say like Stone at 1.2 for 2 years, and then like a Shillington, give him 1.5 for 3 to 4 years. If you can lock him up for that, that'd be sweet.
That would be sweet. But as a player, I don't think he signs for that long at that little of dollars, too. Like, these guys got to bet on themselves, too. So, like, he might do it for 2 years, but yeah. I don't think you're doing it for no 3 or 4. It'd be sick for the organization, but yeah. I mean, I think, these guys are going to bet on themselves, too.
Yeah, I think both of those guys at that under 1.5 for anything more than 1 year would be a pretty wicked deal, just to have some reassurance that you have some extra depth. And then to touch on the Magny deal, Magny, I know he's the greatest player in the organization, but that being said, Lindholm is a far more highly touted player, and Lindholm's honestly on a wicked, wicked deal, 4.85 mil. So
another Trev magic there.
Yeah, and how can you say, Magny, you know what, you are better than Elias Lindholm, so we're gonna give you 5 mil plus on your next deal. He's gonna have to be like, I'm looking at a Derek Ryan contract, maybe slightly more, like a 3.5 for Magny max. But
yeah, I could see him getting up to the 4 million range. I mean, this guy's gonna be a top six for us, so. I mean, paying your top six, 4 million. I mean, look at this guy. Like, he's really coming into his own. I think he's still getting better. Like he said at the start of this year, he's got a lot to prove, and he's showing it. I still think there's a lot more in the tank there with Magny. I mean, this guy's still young. He hasn't been in the league that long. He's flourishing. I think him and Johnny are brewing some chemistry. Hopefully that can continue next year. You'd love to see it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, if you score Magny at, yeah, when's his contract done? Another year yet? He's still got to play out next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he keeps producing how he is and improving a bit, and you're able to get this guy on a 4 year, $4.5-5 million contract, that'd be awesome. And I mean, you know, with changes coming in Calgary, you might be getting some of these bigger contracts off the books. Like if Monahan does go, if Johnny does go, Gio gets exposed to expansion and those suckers in Seattle take them. You know, there's a lot of money off the books right there.
For sure, yeah.
All right, Fish. Well, again, we're coming up against it, so we'll get right into it. Another exciting edition of the Battle of Alberta Question of the Week. This week, you know, we're going to try and keep it a little simple here. The reverse retro jerseys came out at the beginning of this year. So, Fish, as a franchise standpoint, who capitalized on the opportunity better with the releases of the retro jerseys, Edmonton or Calgary? Who nailed it better this year? And as always, you can start because you're probably wrong.
Wrong. All right. Well, I'm going to prove you wrong here. I think that the Flames definitely hit the mark way better than the Oilers did. Seeing the Oilers reverse retro at the beginning of the year, I was a little disappointed. I do think that they really cleaned up the remainder of it. I like the orange shorts, the gloves. I like all that extra stuff. I think the rest of the uniform looks really clean with it. But I just love the Blasty logo, the black. The black jerseys is just like the most intimidating, best color in my opinion for a jersey. It's just so crisp and clean. And I personally, I have the Flames reverse retro ranked pretty high in my rankings personally. And but I don't think that the Oilers are one of the worst. I think they're pretty neutral. They did miss the mark with they could have went back to the oil drop. I know a lot of people wanted that. That would have been awesome. I really wish that I could have gotten something like that to get a McDavid jersey or a Puljujärvi or a Draisaitl jersey with that drop on there and get to see him play in that. But that being said, I still definitely prefer the Flames. I do like watching them in the reverse retro. I think it's a pretty wicked setup they got there. Same with their goalies. They got a really good setup with the pads and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, the black kits are just so crisp and so intimidating, I guess, as a color for sure, especially when you got Milan freaking Lucic rocking it and he's barreling down on you. Yeah, it's pretty intimidating. I mean, surprisingly, I'll agree with you. I think the Oilers absolutely missed the mark with their jerseys, the marketing chance, everything. I mean, you could, like you said, all the fans want the old dropback. You could have brought like a new jersey to actually go out there and sell the fans and hats, merchandise, like really capitalize on this opportunity. You look down south there in Calgary, you know, Blasty hasn't been a jersey for us since like 05, 06, really, that we haven't used it. So, you know, we're 15 years down the line. Now we're bringing them back. A little bit of new flair onto the jersey. It looks sharp. It's totally different than the Flaming Sea, anything else we're doing right now. So it's actually a brand new jersey. So you know, new hats, new toques, new shirts, new hoodies, everything, right? Just a total marketing home run. And I mean, the kit looks sick. And then you go up here to Edmonton, it's like, well, I mean, what do you want to do? We could go three stripes, blue, orange, and white. Yeah, let's do that. Let's roll that out. We'll go, yeah, the three stripes, we'll go white, blue, and orange. Like, what, just like the last 28 freaking jerseys you've had here in Edmonton? Like, why not give the fans something new? Like, I'm not knocking the jersey. It looks good. It does look good. It's a nice looking jersey, but come on, man. It's the same old boring three stripes, orange, blue, blue, yeah. Like, so, at some moment in this franchise's decision making, they got to get out of the past. Like, the five banners hanging in the rafter aren't on the ice helping McDavid win a cup this year. Yeah. Like, let's get out of the past, boys.
They just iced another away jersey, in my opinion. I just think everything else apart from the jersey makes the kit look better.
It's a nice kit, but as like a marketing execution standpoint, like, they missed the boat on being able to sell so much things. Like, it's the same logo, it's the same design, it's the same freaking three colors. Like, missed the boat.
Like you said, 2005 was the last time that the 2005 2006 ish that time that was the last time the drop was there. Why not follow suit with Calgary? I'm sure someone knew what these reverse retros are going to look like before it came out in the Oilers organization. They didn't look at it and they weren't like, oh, well, you know what? We kind of just put out another away jersey. I'm not running out there to go and get a reverse retro. Yeah, it'd be cool to get one. But I have buddies that are quote unquote jersey collectors. They have a lot of jerseys. They don't have an Oilers reverse retro. They got the Coyotes, the Kings, all these other types of people. They got all these cool different.
Well, yeah, they're all New Jersey, exactly. Like, Edmonton missed the boat. Yeah. All right, we put that one to bed. Bonus follow-up to the BOA. Your top five reverse retros around the league. Adam, you start.
All righty. Well, I'm just going to pull this up because I don't personally have, like, the rankings. I have my five favorite. I have a couple honorable mentions I do want to touch on. Personally, I think there's a lot of cool ones. We're not going to talk about Detroit. That one's going to go in the garbage.
Practice jersey.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what that was. I personally think ones that are this first one here in my honorable mentions might be a little iffy, might strike some people wrong. I think that the Golden Knights reverse retro is actually pretty sick, personally.
The red ones?
The red ones.
Yeah, way better than the mustard gold BS.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of people don't like that one for some reason.
I ain't down with their helmets. Like, the chrome domes or the gold domes, like, I did. That's like, maybe this is in Europe. Get those out of here.
Yeah, not a shiny gold, but like a real nice, like.
Oh, yeah, but like chrome dome? Like, come on, man. Like, this is the NHL.
I can see the camera on their helmet. So, touched on Vegas, I really like the Rangers one. That one just fell short. I just like, it's very crisp. The color's nice. I love the throwback jersey to Malik when he scored the between-the-legs shootout goal against your boy, Olaf Kolzig, your favorite goalie of all time.
Yeah, he's up there. I do love me some Olaf Kolzig.
And then just to touch on it, I thought the Yotes. I really like the Yotes one, the Coyotes. Super different. The color's cool. I love the little desert on the bottom there. It's just so out there. It's just completely different from what
they call that the Kachanka or something. Like, back in like the Jeremy Roenick days, like those Kachankas or whatever the tits you call them. I love those jerseys. I was hoping these ones are kind of more like those ones. Now, they got a little wild with the color schemes on there, so, like, I don't have them in my top five, but, yeah, I just throw my 2 cents in there, butchering a name, whatnot.
Yeah, no, we're close. Chonkla, Kachanka, whatever. Okay, but to get to the top five, I think I'm going to put at five the Tampa Bay Lightning. I personally really like the Tampa Bay Lightning. I like that throwback to Vinny LeCavalier. You got St. Louis. It just reminds you of
Richard.
Pretty sure.
Careful where this is going.
Pretty sure Clofish, the Ryan Klo played in that jersey. You know, a lot of sad times for Flames fans. We also have the Habs, it's super simple, but watching them in those jerseys, man, are they clean. Those are so
nice. They do look nice out there, for sure.
I love those ones. Those ones are awesome. Then third place, the Calgary Flames. I have Calgary at 3 for my reverse retros. I just love the Blasty. Once again, like I said, the black is so crisp. It's awesome. I love that. That would definitely be third. I really, really love – at second, I have Washington. I love that old-fashioned logo. A lot of people don't fly with the Washington one, but in my opinion, I do really like it. And I think it's just goes back to those days with Ovi scoring all these crazy goals, the kids coming up. He's in that jersey. I think it was NHL 08. He was on the cover. It was that jersey, the away jersey, the ridiculous goal he scored against the Coyotes. That one would be my number 2. And then for number 1, I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers. I just love. I love their old logo. I think they need to bring it back. And it's not the same colors that they had previously. It's just like a nice darker tones, a little bit of that panther gold and yellow. The red's perfect. It's just that's my favorite one personally. I gotta rank Panthers. So it goes number 1, Panthers, Washington at 2, Flames at 3, Habs at 4. And Tampa Bay at 5.
You know what? Surprisingly, we have a pretty different list. Now, I'm not going to say I'm about to give you a top 5, then rattle through half the league's jerseys, but I got one honorable mention I'll throw out there. The New Jersey Devils. I like the green. I always did. So I was happy to see them go back, but I didn't throw them into my top 5. I had Buffalo in there, but I took them out just because their logo. The colors are nice, but I would have went with a different logo for them. Getting to the top 5, we'll start at 5. I got the LA Kings.
Yeah.
The purple and gold, sharp, look nice, money, beautiful. Number 4, I got the Florida Panthers.
There you go.
I love that logo.
Yeah.
And that jersey, like the colors, like you don't see a lot of that scheme, and like it just works. It works. It's kind of like a team we have here in Edmonton, our junior team, the Edmonton Oil Kings. Like their color scheme, like you think it's just a bunch of weird colors, but man, I love their home and aways. Like the red with the blue, like beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
They've always had a good kit.
But I'm getting off track here. Coming in at number 3, I actually have Carolina. Now they get to cheat and get to use that sexy Hartford Whaler jersey, but hey, they get it. So hey, that's a sexy jersey. Number 2, another team that kind of got to cheat and use another team's jersey, Colorado. That Nordiques jersey is damn sexy as well. I know this is the top 5, so that's why I think all these jerseys are sexy. So I got Colorado, another team that kind of got to cheat and use a Nordiques jersey, but hey, beautiful jersey. And at number 1, Minnesota Wild. Love that jersey.
Really?
That is a clean jersey.
Really? Oh, not even the Flames?
I'm not allowed to pick the Flames, remember?
Oh, yes. All right.
But they were in my top 5. If I was allowed to pick the Flames for this, they would have been in my top 5. Probably not number 1, but yeah, I got Minnesota number 1. So to recap, LA 5, Florida 4, Carolina 3, Colorado 2, and Minnesota 1. I would add Calgary in there, but for the sake of this question, I'm not allowed to pick Calgary.
Where would you have ranked Calgary?
Top 3.
Top 3, so roughly about the
same. I really like that Minnesota jersey. But yeah, really? I would add Calgary knocking out Carolina or Colorado just for the sake of they kind of got to cheat and use a really sick jersey from way back in the day.
Get a Kaprizov jersey like that. Yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of people love the Nordiques one. I think it's really cool. I just thought it was kind of like I do like it. It would be in my tops. But I just had the other ones. I thought the Dallas Stars really missed out on potentially using the greatest organization of all time in the California Golden Seals. That would have been my favorite by far.
And like their jerseys, like they look like one of those special edition. Like we have them here in Edmonton and all around. Like they look like they don't even look like they're a legit jersey, you know?
Yeah, like my girlfriend, she has a Oilers like training jersey. That is just like black and whatever.
Yeah, and like a little bit of orange accents.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what the Dallas Stars jerseys look like. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I wish the Predators also would have went back to that one logo they had with the front facing saber-tooth tiger. That would have been cool as well. But you know, I can't have everything I wish for.
Well, that about does it for us here. Another episode for the New Era Flames. Myself, Cam Elder, and Adam Clausen through the other side of the screen. Give us a like. Give us a follow on Twitter at New Era Flames _ at LZ14 2 Zs at Adam Clausen and at New Era Hockey Network, where you'll find all our networks. We got coverage across all the Canadian cities. All the podcasts are starting to fire up now. Big exciting things happening. So from us here, Flames Nation, you have yourselves a good one and stay safe.
See you next week, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good one.